This is 1A. I'm Jen White in Washington. It's been nearly a week since a violent mob invaded the U.S. Capitol. 61 people were arrested during the riots. Most were nabbed not for the assault on the Capitol building, but for violating D.C.'s 6 o'clock curfew. Compare that to how police handled the summer protests when more than 300 people were arrested in one day.
We witnessed two systems of justice. When we saw one that let extremists storm the United States Capitol, and another that released tear gas on peaceful protesters last summer.
The disparity did not go unnoticed, not by lawmakers and not by protesters.
I've collected testimonials from different people and also experienced a lot while I was protesting here. Being kettled, being beaten, being pepper sprayed, limbs broken. I had friends in the hospital with cracked skulls. Sexual assaults. Once you're booked, they take your phone and they also take your mask and crowd you together. General taunting, lots of sexual assault and harassment. General just extreme police brutality all throughout the BLM protests.
The story of last week's insurrection continues to move very quickly. Several Capitol Police officers have now been suspended. Others are being investigated over suspected involvement in the attack. USCP says they are, quote, actively reviewing video and other open source materials, end quote. Disciplinary action, including dismissal, has not been ruled out. Let's unpack the latest with Daniela Cheslow. She's a reporter for WAMU. That's Washington's NPR station. Daniela, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us, Rayshawn Ray. He's a professor of sociology at the University of Maryland. Rayshawn, welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
And Frank Straub, the former chief of police of Spokane, Washington. He's now the director of the Center for Mass Violence Response Studies at the National Police Foundation. Frank, welcome.
Thank you for having me on the show.
And we invited both the U.S. Capitol Police and the Metropolitan Police Department, that's D.C.'s police force, to provide a representative or statement for today's program, but neither did. Daniela, as I said, the story is still moving very quickly. Can you tell us more about these Capitol Police suspensions?
Sure. Well, Representative Tim Ryan, Democrat of Ohio, he chairs the Appropriations Subcommittee on the legislative branch that has oversight over the U.S. Capitol Police. And he says two officers were suspended. One of them was taped taking a selfie with a protester, and another one was in a MAGA hat directing the rioters. And he said someone else was also arrested in law enforcement. He wasn't sure if it was Capitol Police or National Guard. He was talking to reporters yesterday, and he said the Capitol Police are looking at another 10 to 15 other officers. They're under investigation. And the new acting chief of the Capitol Police, she says it's her intent to prosecute to the fullest extent of the law.
Now, there's a narrative circulating on social media that police officers actively let rioters into the Capitol. What do we know about that?
You know, there is a lot of video coming out, and I think that Ryan's comments reveal that there was some level of Capitol Police officers who had some sympathy for the rioters. But I think you're seeing a lot more video, Jen, of Capitol Police and MPD officers fighting enormous odds. You know, here you have a crowd of some say 8,000, some say 10,000. I was there. The people I was talking to, they were, some of them were wearing armed, you know, like tactical gear, helmets. One man I saw, he had pepper spray in his eyes, but it had ricocheted off his helmet. Meanwhile, there were some Capitol Police officers who didn't even have head protection. And you're seeing now in the last few days, of course, there was that one officer, Brian Sicknick, who lost his life during the protest or during the riot. Another took his life over the weekend. 58 MPD officers were injured. So you had people in the fray, and the law enforcement really wasn't prepared for what they encountered.
Give us your firsthand perspective as a reporter who was on the ground at both this summer's Black Lives Matter protests and at last week's insurrection. What differences in policing did you observe?
It was night and day. I mean, if you go back to June 1st, that was the night, if you recall, National Guard helicopters were used to hover over protesters. And I was there with our photographer, Tyrone Turner. And we saw as the rotor wash, the wind that was caused from, that was raised by those helicopter propellers, it, you know, you had all this broken glass. Protesters had smashed windows and the broken glass was just flying around. Tree branches were flying around. And that was in addition to federal agents who were on the street. You saw DEA officials, for example, monitoring traffic intersections. And I was kind of astonished on Wednesday. I was with the protesters in the morning when they were listening to speeches from Donald Trump Jr. and Rudy Giuliani and then the president himself. And during the first bit of the protest, you could argue it didn't really have a sort of violent undertone, or at least it wasn't overt. However, if you talk to people and ask them what they were thinking, they would tell you that they were very angry. They would tell you that they wanted to tell Congress how they felt. And as they started walking to the Capitol, I asked someone what he planned to do, and he said, well, I'd like to see Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer blown away. And even if I'd wanted to turn him into police, there was no one to turn him into. There was very little law enforcement until you got really right up to the Capitol.
Frank, give us your perspective as a former police chief. What did you observe from a law enforcement perspective during last week's storming of the Capitol?
I think, you know, first of all, we have to be cognizant that 58 police officers were seriously injured or injured, that one police officer was killed and another police officer took his own life as a result of this event. We also saw, and we continue to see, images of police officers who certainly put themselves in harm's way to protect members of Congress, their staffs, reporters, visitors in the Capitol and the Capitol building themselves. So a lot of heroism, a lot of bravery, and a lot of sacrifice. At the same time, though, we saw that the Capitol Police and their counterparts were ill-prepared, inadequately staffed, inadequately equipped to prevent the attack on the Capitol and to stop the attack.
Rayshawn, you've visited the Capitol building many times. What's security usually like there? What does it usually take to get inside?
I mean, it's typically a combination of trying to get into the airport coupled with trying to get onto a military base. I mean, there is active law enforcement presence. Oftentimes, people standing on buildings with guns, they are very visible. There are barricades, the places where these domestic terrorists were, you cannot even get there. I mean, as you mentioned, I go to Capitol Hill quite often, either to testify or meet with policymakers. And it was just troubling to see the level of access that they were able to get that close to the Capitol. And I mean, these are things that need to be investigated. I mean, one thing I know about studying policing over the years is that the only time that a limited amount of personnel is deployed is because the incident was not viewed as a credible threat. There seemed to be neglect at the least and conspiracy at the most among the upper echelons of law enforcement, and what people are saying is highlighting that.
Daniela, can you explain for us how policing in Washington, D.C. works at the Capitol and elsewhere, because the job is divided between multiple forces?
That's right, Jen. So in D.C., you have the Metropolitan Police Department. That's D.C.'s department that patrols the streets. Then you have the U.S. Capitol Police, and that's in charge of the Capitol. The National Park Service has its own park police, and the National Guard can also be called in. However, unlike governors, D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser can't activate them herself. She has to get approval from the Pentagon. So you can see here an overlap of different law enforcement agencies, and I think that is one factor, although not the only factor, when you look at this summer's protest, which primarily happened on the streets of D.C. and therefore MPD could handle it themselves without having to have intermediaries such as the Capitol Police that they were working with. And I think you're also seeing, you know, the mayor of D.C., she called up 340 National Guardsmen ahead of the protests, and they were charged with doing things like traffic control at checkpoints around the city, metro entrances. They were not armed. They didn't have riot gear. And her thinking, it appears, is that the U.S. Capitol Police had their own building under control. And there was somewhat of a pushback from the summer when more than 5,000 National Guard troops came in above Bowser's objections to police the protests over the summer. So I think she wanted there to be not too much of a heavy profile for law enforcement, assuming that the Capitol Police had their side of things under control. And of course, as we know now, that the police did not have a good handle of it inside the Capitol building.
Frank, just big picture, what's your understanding of what went wrong in the policing of the Capitol last week? Was it just about not being prepared, or was something else happening?
Well, I think there was a significant failure to prepare and respond to what was weeks of social media suggesting that there was going to be, at a minimum, an extremely large demonstration. But there was also in social media very clearly articulated threats to the Capitol and to individuals and members of Congress. And I think that failure really goes to law enforcement leadership and political leadership for not mobilizing the appropriate resources and providing the appropriate equipment to the officers who were on the ground, making sure that they did have support from the National Guard or mutual aid agencies. And I think that's what we saw, that there was this failure to appreciate the warnings, the intelligence, the social media threats. And as a result of that, we saw destruction of property and we saw persons get seriously injured and killed.
We're talking to former Spokane, Washington Police Chief Frank Straub, WAMU reporter Daniela Cheslow, and Rayshawn Ray. He's a University of Maryland sociologist. We're also hearing from you. Mark wrote on our Facebook page, serious question, why do we continue to renew the Patriot Act and let the NSA spy on all of our electronic devices if they can't even stop a group from openly planning a terrorist attack against our country on Parler? I'm Jen White. We'll hear more from you and from our guests in a moment. This is 1A from WAMU and NPR. I'm Jen White. This is 1A. We're discussing the law enforcement response to and possible role in last week's attack on the U.S. Capitol. The Capitol Police Force has suspended two officers. According to Congressman Tim Ryan, one took a selfie with a rioter, another was seen directing people while wearing a Make America Great Again hat. We wanted to get a better look inside the Capitol Police Force, so this morning we spoke with Butch Jones. He was an officer on the force for 36 years, from 1973 to 2009, and I asked Mr. Jones about his experience on the job.
Life on Capitol Police was good, bad, and evil.
That's an interesting combination. What was the good, what was the bad, and what was the evil?
Well, when I first started on the department, I was a rank of plain clothes until I discovered that there was a lot of discrimination on the department. When I spoke of it, the department came after me to the point where they tried to hurt me financially, physically. I was arrested. I went to trial. So I had a combination of everything on Capitol Hill.
Now, two Capitol Police officers have been suspended for their actions during last week's events, and at least 10 more are being investigated. How surprising is that to you?
It's not surprising to me at all. I just think that it was too easy. I think it was more people involved. Right now, I think they are the scapegoats. Sergeant-at-Arms of the Senate and the House have already resigned, but I think it's above their pay raise. For the decisions that were made, they had to come from high up.
You mentioned your experience on the Capitol Police Force. How much of a problem do you think racism is on the force?
Racism has been a great problem on Capitol Police. One of the names for Capitol Hill is the Last Plantation, which is Capitol Hill and Congress police themselves. It's no one police Capitol Hill or the Congress. And they have a tendency, if you complain, they try to make you be quiet.
The Last Plantation. Who uses that term?
Anybody that works on Capitol Hill uses that term. I mean, they are well known for the Last Plantation. You have a good old boy system on Capitol Hill. So there's no one there to correct them for the things that they do.
So as you were watching last week, what was your perspective of how race played in to the police response?
I think think it played a great part. You know, number one is because there were, this was a white demonstration. Maybe they backed off enforcement, but because this was demonstration was orchestrated by the White House and this was a President Trump demonstration, I think that more people were involved in the decisions that not have reinforcement. I believe the chief, when he said that he asked and the sergeant arms turned them down. Again, I still say the decision that was made was above the sergeant arms who worked, again, for Congress.
So I just want to be clear, because what I hear you saying is that there was coordination at higher levels. That's your belief. There was some sort of coordination happening at higher levels. Is it that, or do you think this was just an underestimation of what was going to happen on Wednesday?
I think it's a bigger picture. Number one is the damage was done on the Democratic side. You know, they went into statutory hall. No statues were demolished or destroyed. You know, if you're going in somebody's house and you're going to destroy, you don't pick and choose a room, or you don't know what room. Every room is the same. In this incident, it was just the Democrats. So do I think that there was some information given out, or do I think that it was too easy? Absolutely.
How difficult is it to navigate the Capitol building?
It's very hard to navigate the Capitol building. You can get lost within 2 minutes. I believe that information was given out.
We know that one officer died by suicide following the attack. We know another was killed during the insurrection. How concerned are you for the rank and file officers?
I just believe that it's a blessing that more officers wasn't killed and members of Congress wasn't killed. There was no reinforcement. This is what really disturbs me. There was no reinforcement. You had a line of officers, no more than 20, and you got 500 or 1,000 people trying to get in that line. It's no way that they can hold back if it was 100 people. Not to have reinforcement, something is wrong with their picture, and that needs to be investigated to the utmost.
That's Butch Jones. He's a former Capitol Police officer. Butch, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you for having me.
And we invited both the U.S. Capitol Police and the Metropolitan Police Department, that's D.C.'s police force, to provide a representative or statement for today's show. Neither did. Now let's turn back to our guests for the hour. WAMU reporter Daniela Cheslow, University of Maryland sociologist Rayshawn Ray, and former Spokane, Washington Police Chief Frank Straub. He now works for the National Police Foundation. We also want to hear from you. You can comment on our Facebook page, tweet us at 1A, or send us an email at 1A@WAMU.org. We heard from Barbara, who writes on our Facebook page, very clear difference between the summer's protests and the insurrection. You might say black and white. And Yanenga wrote on our Facebook page, the security when policing the BLM protests included an underlying narrative that BLM and police were on opposite sides and one side had the power of a war. The war-equipped side had a tank, military helicopter, and full-body tactical gear complete with shields and guns. The insurrection, on the other hand, those officers looked like they were ready for the hallway patrol kids to show up for a field trip. Rayshawn, I want to come to you because this is part of the conversation we're having right now about the response to Wednesday's insurrection and how race ties into all of this. Your thoughts?
Well, look, I've repeatedly written about how bad apples come from rotten trees in policing. Well, the domestic terrorists who stormed the United States Capitol come from those same rotten trees. The roots of those trees are laced with white supremacy. And make no mistake, the Capitol insurgency was about making America only great for white people. The noose, Confederate flag, the Auschwitz concentration camp shirt, and other white nationalist paraphernalia show what they believe, that Donald Trump and Trumpism as an ideology has injected a steroid of hate into the American mainstream. And this injection simply needed a little jolt to wreak havoc on symbols of American democracy that have withstood wars and attacks for centuries. These ideologies and actions fly in the face of law enforcement, who actually aim to protect people and protect our democracy. Black police officers report being called the N-word repeatedly and watching their fellow officers take selfies, help women down steps, and kiki and ha-ha with these domestic terrorists. This was during and after these insurgents destroyed the offices of Democrats, including House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Congressman James Clyburn, and after they defecated on sacred ground and then smeared it down the hallway with their shoes. We have to be very clear that unfortunately some of this should not be surprising, considering that America has never truly dealt with the roots of law enforcement that link back to slave patrols. America should be honest that for the many people who are attracted to law enforcement because they truly want to protect and serve all Americans, there are others who are attracted because they want to enforce white supremacist ideologies. Enforcing these ideologies means relegating pursuits of racial equity while also criminalizing blackness. See, this is because blackness is viewed as the antithesis to white supremacy. They view it on a continuum, even though a lot of us just view that pursuing racial equity is good for everyone. That's actually what the research shows. So in this regard, anyone who actively and overtly embraces racial equity are possible victims of white national mob violence, even when the people doing that actually wear a badge.
Daniela, let's talk about the arrests. D.C. police arrested five times as many people at the height of this summer's Black Lives Matter protests than during last week's Capitol breach. Have D.C. police explained that disparity?
Well, the acting police chief, Robert Conti, who is African-American, told reporters that his first priority for his force was to take control of the Capitol. And I think also the D.C. police force, the racial makeup of that force is interesting. It's 50% African-American, 10% Hispanic or Latino. This is a force that prides itself on having a diverse officer corps that reflects the diversity of the city. So in Conti's telling, they arrive at the Capitol and there is such chaos that the first priority is to get everybody out of the building and then they can start making arrests. But I will tell you, as a reporter who watched MPD kettle protesters after the curfew expired on June 1st, and you saw a group of police officers surround a group of activists who were unarmed as far as I could see, and then take mugshots of each of them before putting them into the police vans, it was night and day. It was really quite a stark difference.
We're talking to WAMU reporter Daniela Cheslow, University of Maryland sociologist Rayshawn Ray, and former Spokane, Washington police chief Frank Straub. We're also hearing from you. Catherine in Virginia emailed, "It seems obvious to me that there wasn't better security preparation because the protests were in favor of maintaining Trump's position in office. When the Black Lives Matter protests happened in the summer, Trump unleashed all of the military and law enforcement agencies at his disposal because he did not agree with the protesters' cause." Frank, there is a distinction between a protest and a riot. In law enforcement, how do you make that distinction?
I think it's at the moment that a protest turns violent and there's a destruction of property, there's attacks on individuals. I think that's the turning point. And I think both of my co-panelists have made some very good points about the differences between what we saw in Lafayette Square and what we saw at the Capitol. I think what we saw at the Capitol, unfortunately, again, where those law enforcement officers weren't supported, and there was really no opportunity to make arrests. And I think the other piece is that there was clearly a group of protesters within that crowd, and a significant group of protesters, that had one goal and one goal only. That was to get into the building or buildings and to disrupt the certification of the Electoral College. And in the process of that, to do damage and to wreak mayhem. A very different focus than the individuals at Lafayette Square who were expressing their First Amendment rights and were directed to clear the area by overwhelming force. And I don't think we can not talk about that contrast. And I think it's an important contrast to recognize. But in this case, we were dealing with a riot, we were dealing with insurrection, we were dealing with trained, tactically equipped, domestic terrorists embedded within a protest group.
Well, we saw that law enforcement was caught off guard last week, despite warnings online about what might happen. But on WAMU's local talk show, the Kojo Namdi Show, D.C. Police Chief Robert Conti said his force didn't mess up. U.S. Capitol Police did.
I'm saying this as chief of police. I'm saying this as an African-American man. I believe that there was a miscalculation on what they were actually going to be dealing with on their part. I did not make that miscalculation with respect to the Metropolitan Police Department. Our mayor didn't make that miscalculation for our city.
Daniela, we know we're still investigating what happened on Wednesday, but what do we know about how the various police forces involved prepared for last week's events?
Well, Jen, I spoke to somebody who worked in congressional security for many years, and he said that when you look at specifically the performance of the U.S. Capitol Police, there's an element of the building that's different from the White House and makes it different to defend. He says, first of all, it's open. It's more open to the public by nature than the White House. And so although one of your panelists said before that there's a lot of security to get into the building, on the outside of the building, it is fairly easy to approach it. Another thing is that the people calling the shots in the White House, there's one person who can decide to surround the building with a fence. That's the president. And he said, by contrast, in Congress, lawmakers have input into some of the security decisions, and there's a lot more of them who are making their own suggestions. And this security expert told me that often it can be hard to tell threats apart. You know, the ones that are made online, he said there's threats made online every day, and it can be hard to decipher which is just bluster and which is real. But obviously here, police planned for a protest and not a riot. They did not prepare for the event, for the emergency possibility that they would have these armed rioters approaching the Capitol building. I've been sort of shocked by seeing footage of cops not having helmets or riot shields, or seeing protesters ripping their gear from their hands, using riot shields to break open windows, using metal barricades as battering rams to get the doors open. And I think here that is really where you see the operational problem of the Capitol Police. Not enough armor on the individual officers, not enough protection for the building, and no contingency planning with the National Guard. And that's why when the building was breached, you had the head of the U.S. Capitol Police, who has recently resigned, Stephen Sund, calling the D.C., calling in for reinforcement from MPD, calling the National Guard frantically. And those reinforcements took a long time to arrive. By the time the National Guard got there, Jen, it was 5:40 p.m. That is hours after the breach. And I think some of that was complicated because there had been pipe bombs placed in the DNC, I believe, and in the RNC. So Chief Sun's attention was split. But there was just no imagination that this crowd would be capable of wreaking the kind of havoc that they did. And if he had been reading the online forums more closely, he would have found it. Another thing I will say is some of the charges on these rioters are quite alarming. One man from Alabama, a 70-year-old, was found to have homemade napalm in his car. He had melted styrofoam, and he intended to use it for Molotov cocktails. So you get a sense of the sort of terror that these people, some of them, plan to inflict. And close watchers of Parler and other social media say this shouldn't have been a surprise. People were comparing notes on the kind of weapons they wanted to bring to the Capitol. It was all there if you were looking for it.
We're discussing the policing of protests with WAMU reporter Daniela Cheslow, University of Maryland professor of sociology Rayshawn Ray, and a former Spokane, Washington police chief Frank Straub. We're also hearing from you. Renee tweeted, "I don't know how police didn't know something was going to happen. Even I knew something terrible was going to occur because people from TikTok who live in surrounding neighborhoods warned people to stay away because of threats." And we also got this message from Eric, who says, "I went to a climate change protest at the Capitol. The Capitol Police were ready and waiting with plenty of trucks, manpower, and equipment. 140-plus peaceful protesters were arrested within minutes of stepping on the Capitol building stairs. There were lots of police to shove us around and wrap our wrists in zip ties. There was zero evidence, zero destruction, zero threats against human life. Just wow. The contrast is infuriating, shocking, and sadly pathetic." We'll hear more from you and our guests in a moment. This is 1A. Now let's get back to our conversation about policing with University of Maryland sociologist Rayshawn Ray, former Spokane, Washington Police Chief Frank Straub, and WAMU reporter Daniela Cheslow. We invited both the U.S. Capitol Police and the Metropolitan Police Department, that's D.C.'s police force, to provide a representative or statement for today's program, but neither did. And I want to play a message we got from one of you on the topic of the politicization of police.
Hi, my name is Connor. I'm calling from Boise, Idaho. I wanted to call in and say, yes, I really believe that the police force is being politicized. I was at a Black Lives Matter protest last year when biker gangs and far-right extremists, including neo-Nazis, showed up and violently attacked us. The police did nothing to step in until these attacks had actually occurred and were very mute about it afterward. So I really believe the police force is influenced by the perception of who they are protecting and if those people agree with them or support them in their politics.
And Gene said us this on Twitter, police are entitled to have political opinions, but willingness to believe conspiracy theories make me question their judgment and investigative skills, and any hint of white supremacy should be disqualifying. Rayshawn, is the politicization of police anything new?
No, I mean, it's not. It's not new at all. You know, unfortunately, what we have to do is as America, what this Capitol coup has done is put a mirror up that America needed. We needed that to overcome our warped sense of American exceptionalism. And part of thinking about this not being new is it's important. So let me give a simple history lesson. I mentioned slave patrols earlier. We've never dealt with that. We fast forward to the civil rights movement. There was a lot that happened in between there, but I'll just fast forward there. There were a series of groups that popped up, such as the Emerald Society, founded in Boston for Irish firefighters and police officers. It had a white supremacist slant to it. There are additional subgroups within law enforcement and attached to law enforcement that the Department of Homeland Security has mentioned in reports. General John Allen, who's the president of Brookings, has testified on this. I've testified on this about the infiltration that white nationalists and white supremacist groups have had. And the problem here that people need to recognize is that the Republican Party and people who identify as being Republican have to recognize that that sect is attached to them. And that is something that they're going to have to grapple with. So simply saying this isn't America, this isn't us, this isn't how I think. Well, unfortunately, a lot of people feel that if you voted for Trump, then you embrace Trumpism. And embracing Trumpism is actually embracing, in many respects, the ideologies that led to the Capitol coup that we seen last week.
Frank, how difficult is it to, I guess, strike that balance between officers, you know, having, you know, a right to free speech and, you know, expressing their political ideologies and rooting extremism out of police forces?
Every individual, every U.S. citizen has a right to their beliefs, whether we necessarily agree with them or not. And so I don't think it's unusual that we would find people in any profession that adopt a variety of political ideologies. That being said, it is critically important that the police observe the rule of law, that they do not let their personal beliefs and ideologies influence their conduct, whether it be on or off duty. They have an obligation to protect the Constitution of the United States, their state constitutions, and their local ordinances and laws. And that's paramount. That is the underlying substance of policing. And the fair and objective and appropriate application of the law is what builds trust in our communities and in our neighborhoods. And when individual police officers or police leaders vacillate from that, that's where we start to see these fissures between the police and the communities they serve grow and become volatile. And so the beliefs that somebody has in their own space, those are their beliefs. But when it comes to being a police officer and taking an oath of office, their obligation is to uphold the law in a fair and objective manner.
But I think the question I have is about how that is effectively applied within police departments, how police unions make that more difficult or easier to apply those standards. Because there's so many questions right now after last summer's protests, after what we saw on Wednesday, about whether whatever is being used in these departments, whether it's actually effective.
I think it's extremely difficult. I think that, and it's difficult for a couple of reasons, right? We certainly have individuals within police departments across the country, whether they're local, state, or federal, that allow their belief systems to permeate and to influence their conduct. Unfortunately, not only do we have labor organizations that and labor rules that protect those officers and stop police leaders from being able to remove them from their ranks, but we also find elected officials who also either directly or indirectly support those officers or hedge their bets on those officers. And I think that's something that we saw to some degree last week. And I think we've talked about it, the politicalization of policing and police officers. And I think that's what has gotten policing in trouble to some extent, is the influence of elected officials, their desire sometimes to use rogue or challenging police officers for their political advantage. And I think oftentimes police chiefs are left in this quagmire of not being able to take disciplinary action or to remove those officers. And I think when we look at the number of police chiefs that lost their positions following the death of Mr. Floyd in Minneapolis, I think a lot of those police chiefs left very frustrated because they weren't able to do their job, not just during the protests, but before the protests, that they saw officers that were challenging and needed to be removed. And when you have that situation, what does it do for the good officers? What does it do for the officers who come to work every single day to do their job, to build trust with their community, who put themselves and their safety between those who want to do harm and the communities they serve? And I think that creates, and we heard it from the former Capitol Police officer a little while ago, this disparate treatment within police organizations that then carries out into the interactions that police officers have with the communities they serve.
Daniela Yogananda Pittman became the first woman and the first African-American person to lead U.S. Capitol Police yesterday, replacing Chief Stephen Sund, who resigned last week. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says she's looking beyond that agency for answers to what went wrong. So we can talk about individual officers, but on a larger systemic level, what additional accountability have we seen or might we expect?
Well, as we've mentioned on this program, we saw not only did Chief Sund resign, but also the sergeants at arms of the House and Senate. So I think we're not done yet with the repercussions of leadership here. But I think also to go back to what former Chief Straub was saying about the tension between the unions and the police chiefs, here's a statement from the chairman of the D.C. Police Union, Greg Pemberton. He released it the day after the riot on the Capitol, and he said, it seems important now to consider some of the rhetoric that has become ubiquitous regarding defunding, disarming, and restricting professional policing in the city. And he carried on to say that to address address threats like the one we saw yesterday. Supporting the police is paramount, and such safety, quote, should not be undermined by misguided demagoguery and activism. And I think in that statement that you have, you can see the tension with the police who say we're protecting the streets, we're protecting First Amendment activities, we're protecting our capital from violent rioters, but at the same time, stop it with this defunding the police rhetoric. And I think on the other side, the Black Lives Matter movement does have a lot of criticism about the way police treat African Americans, treat people of color. And part of that conversation does include ideas about defunding the police or putting more restrictions on police. Here in D.C., we have a change in leadership. Chief Newsom is on his way to Prince William County in Virginia, which is why we have an acting police chief now. This happens as the city council is deliberating over new regulations on the power of police, including what they can and cannot bring to protests. So I think that this event in the Capitol sits right in the middle of this tension between the police and the policed.
We're talking to WAMU reporter Daniela Cheslow, University of Maryland sociologist Rayshawn Ray, and former Spokane, Washington police chief Frank Straub. We're also hearing from you. Selden in Maryland emailed us. He says he used to work for a city police department. He says conversations on policing tend to be characterized by simplistic and reductionist thinking. We don't talk about the irrational social expectations for the police, such as responding to mental health emergencies, the capacity of the job to brutalize and dehumanize originally idealistic officers, and the impact of occupational trauma and stress. We also heard from Jay in Oklahoma, who says, what kind of training does Capitol, D.C., and Park Police have? How does that compare to doctors who require medical licenses or lawyers who are required to pass the bar? If we were able to hold law enforcement to real professional standards, would they have been so selective in how they police protests? Rayshawn, it feels like our listeners are leaning into some larger ideas about policing. These are conversations we've been having for quite some time now. But as you look at what happened on Wednesday and you think about where the conversation can go from here, what's top of mind for you?
Well, I think it's a few things. I think first, when it comes to defund the police, I always find it interesting. Like, that's an example of politicizing this. The bottom line about what happened last week is that people were ill-prepared because they didn't view them as a threat. And part of not viewing them as a threat is that the people who were involved, meaning mostly white people who were approaching the Capitol, were not viewed as a threat to law enforcement. So when we get to talking about defund the police, we have to realize defund the police is about reallocating funding. I've written about this extensively, and there are valid reasons for that if we take a market-driven, evidence-based approach. So what might happen in Washington, D.C., might not be the same that we need to do in Chicago and LA, but we need to have the same metric and approach to doing it. Part of what people have a problem with are a couple of things. First is that we know that Black people are 3.5 times more likely than whites to be killed by police when they're not attacking or have a weapon. That's just an empirical fact. The second thing we know is that response times are slower in predominantly Black and Latino communities. So when someone has a stroke, when someone has a heart attack, when someone has COVID, the number of minutes that it takes for people to get to them is slower. So people want the same type of responses that are going on. So that's the first thing. Second thing I think about is, of course, people have the right to hold whatever political beliefs they want and vote for whoever they want. That's part of what makes our democratic experiment in America great. The problem, though, is that you don't have the right to have racist attitudes, because our research at the Lab for Applied Social Science Research at the University of Maryland, where I'm the director, we have an innovative virtual reality decision-making lab. Our research shows that police officers' implicit bias, anti-Black bias, as well as their explicit bias, directly impacts their behavior. These individuals should not actually be aiming to protect and serve us, because they end up over-policing people. And these are some of the problems that people have. The third thing is, look, becoming a truly equitable democracy requires work. It requires actively working against ideological forces that try to make America only great for a few. It requires realizing that what happened at the Capitol is who we are as the United States. It also means being courageous to realize that the American Civil War and even Nazi Germany started like this. So if people are worried and scared and fearful, They should be. And the question is how are we going to respond to fight for the soul of America? Everyone is needed in this, from law enforcement to people who are saying that we need active changes to create a racially equitable society.
So
these are some of the things that aren't happening.
Daniela, we only have about 30 seconds here, but very quickly, we know the inauguration is just 8 days away. What steps are being taken to ensure a safe inauguration?
Well, I took a bike ride down to the Capitol today, and you can see there's a new 7-foot-tall fence that goes around it. There was a bus that was unloading National Guardsmen. There are about 15,000 of those that are going to be at the ready for inauguration, and they were very, very heavy on the ground around the Capitol. The D.C. Police Department says all members are going to be activated. Tours of the Washington Monument are canceled through January 24th, and I think we're going to keep on seeing more arrangements to make sure that what happened on Wednesday never happens again.
Well, this is just the first in what I'm sure will be an ongoing conversation. We've been here with Daniela Cheslow, a reporter for WAMU, Rayshawn Ray, a professor of sociology at the University of Maryland, and Frank Straub, the former chief of police of Spokane, Washington. He's now the director of the Center for Mass Violence Response Studies at the National Police Foundation. Thanks to you all. Remember, you can find us on Instagram. Follow us at The 1A Show. Today's producer was Avery Kleinman. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Jen White. Thanks for listening, and let's talk more soon. This is 1A.